Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, hosting this week, and my guest is a familiar voice, I think, Richie Palmer. Gifu Richie. Richie, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you, mate. I mean, not the best, but I'm doing all right. I'm enjoying myself, watching some footy.
Excellent, excellent. That's as much as can be hoped for, I suppose, these days.
That is right. You know, but it is tough times, as you know, but I think we've just got to be like MAFC and drink our orange juice and get on with it, right?
Yeah, yes. Tougher times for some than others, I suppose, when it comes to J2. And luckily for you, I think, Richie, considering you're of the Gifu persuasion, you're on to talk about J2 this time and not J3. So that's one positive, you know, one in the win column for you already.
Well, thank you for your consideration. That's always interesting how you always bring me and Stuart on after Gifu seem to lose to a YSCC or a bottom of the table Sanuki or something.
Yeah, that's why we haven't heard from the commander of the Ryukyu army on the pod yet this season. We've got to wait for them to you know, get a bit lower in the table before we have him on. So Richie, thanks for coming on. Loads to talk about, so we'll get straight into the J2 chat if that's all right. Before we talk about the weekend games from round 16, there was one sort of dirty stop out round 15 game which was played last Thursday night, May the 27th. So Ehime, mentioned already on the pod, won 1-0 away at Sagamihara in what you can only call a relegation six-pointer, I suppose. Ehime well on top for much of this game, scoring in the 15th minute when Yoshiki Fujimoto headed in off the crossbar following a cross from Takashi Kondo. Plenty of other chances for Ehime as well. Goal line clearances and good saves from Sagamihara's goalkeeper Ajino were needed in both halves. And I think, if we're being honest, a better side than Ehime would have probably won the game by more goals. But yeah, it finished Sagamihara 0, Ehime 1 on Thursday night. So that rounded up the round 15 action. We'll talk about round 16 then, Richie. We'll start actually with the Sunday games in a sort of time-bending style, just because the Sunday seemed to have more of the bigger games this time. On Sunday, Niigata returned to the top of the table. This is after they came from behind to beat Ryukyu, mentioned already, 2-1 at the Big Swan. Ryukyu's Ren Ikeda was heavily involved early on in this game. Ryukyu survived a handball appeal when the ball seemed to strike his hand inside the penalty area. I think that was in the 4th minute. And then in the 28th, Ikeda put Ryukyu in front. Keita Tanaka's deep cross from the right somehow found Ikeda in acres of space inside the box, and he coolly swept past Koto Abe. That lead lasted less than a minute, though. Yoshiaki Takagi netting his 7th goal of the season with a very nicely taken half volley from Yuto Horigome's cross. Niigata's winner came midway through the second period when Takahiro Ko bustled his way into the penalty area. The ball ran loose for substitute Kaito Taniguchi to score from close range. So a vital win for Niigata after their back-to-back defeats against Machida and Kyoto recently. For Ryukyu, it's one win in 5 games now, and their key centre-back Ryohei Okazaki, it's been announced, is out injured for the next 6 to 8 weeks. So Niigata 2, Ryukyu 1. At the Big Swan, Ryukyu staying in third place, we should say. Quick mention of the attendance at this game as well, actually 14,759. It's great to see so many supporters inside a stadium, or at least great from a sort of footballing point of view. I'm not too sure about the COVID-19 parameters in Japan right now. But what did you think? Richie, Niigata 2, Ryukyu 1, big game at the top.
Oh, yeah, I'll agree with you about that crowd. It was a great atmosphere for that game, wasn't it? It was like a final game. You know, it was a very, you know, you can see both teams are going at it quite strong. I thought Ryuka and Niigata looked really good in the first half, and they both looked quite confident. They were quite nice goals too, weren't they, both those goals? Oh, really nice. And I think in the second half, Ryuka were just a bit unable to deal with the passing of Niigata at the end. In the second half, Niigata amped it up a little bit. I still think the game probably could have gone either way, but Niigata probably did just enough to win it. But I'm still thinking that Niigata is looking one of the favourites to get promoted at the moment. They're looking really good. But I don't think Ryukyu are out of it either, even though they've had a bit of a slump. I think I saw enough in this game against top opposition like Niigata to show that they're a quality side and they'll be near the top somewhere towards the end of the season, I think. As long as I'm thinking, Okazaki, how much that will influence things. What was it, 6 to 8 weeks, was it? So hopefully for them, it's nothing too bad. But I'm pretty confident they are still in with a chance, and quite a good chance at that.
Well, I think that's a fair comment. I think if you're third after 16 rounds, then you've earned the right to be in the promotion conversation, I think. I also think you're right about Niigata. I can't remember when they went top of the table. Well, okay, this weekend, because they weren't top until after this round. But they've been right up there, haven't they, at the front for ages. So, yeah, they're a serious contender too. Talking about the second place team, Richie, it's Kyoto. Now, they started the weekend top, but they've dropped down to second now because they drew 0-0 at home against Kofu. I've got to mention the pitch at Sanga Stadium for this game, which had the Olympic torch paraded on it, I think, late last week. And a kind of, I don't know how to describe it, like a sort of oval shape, off-centre in the pitch. It just the grass has just been discoloured completely. It's yellow, it looks terrible. Yeah, the only word that I can think of is criminal damage to that pitch. It's absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, Kyoto had the better of the game, as you'd probably expect. Peter Uteka going close with a couple of rasping volleys, but it was actually Kofu who had the best chance of the match late on. Kazushi Mitsuhiro was sent clean through, but he was denied brilliantly by Tomoya Wakahara in the Kyoto goal. So Kyoto 0, Kofu 0 was the full-time score. Kyoto now 11 games unbeaten, with 5 clean sheets in a row and 7 clean sheets in the last 8 games, which is pretty impressive defensively. Kofu are, of course, 5th, their favourite position. They're 6 games unbeaten. They have 4 clean sheets in a row and 5 clean sheets in their last 6. So we probably shouldn't be too surprised that it finished 0-0 here. But yeah, Kyoto did drop to second, but they're level with Niigata on 36 points, as mentioned. Any comments on this game, Richie?
I'll agree with you again on the pitch. That was, yes, criminal, wasn't it? Everyone loves the Tokyo Olympics even more now, don't they? But it was a tough game. I think, again, this was like almost like a finals game as well. Like, both these teams looked pretty good. Kyoto down the flanks, like down the side, ran the ball quite a bit. And Uteka was, even though his shots were quite far, they were quite low, hard, you know, near the target. Kofu's defense was really good though. Like, they kept all Kyoto's, most of Kyoto's shots were from quite far away. Like, Kyoto didn't get close enough in to get any really good shots. And I think if Kofu had snatched that win when Wakahara saved that one-on-one, don't know if it would have been undeserved, but I think a draw is a fair result here. I think, again, both teams look finals contenders, promotion contenders towards the end. I think Kyoto, that little bit better. I think Kofu, defense-wise, I think they're the best, maybe the best defense, second best defense, don't they? Kyoto is the best. Kyoto is the best defense. They have the second best defense. So I think they've got good defense, but I think Kyoto, just with Uteka especially, he provides that extra X factor that Kofu is just kind of missing. I think they're just missing a little bit more of X factor that would put them in the top two at the moment. But I think, as with Ryukyu and Niigata, I think these 4 will be around the top 4 again come the end of the season.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of those comments. I think we have to say, just based on what I've seen anyway, the last couple of months, it's Niigata and Kyoto who are the front runners, and then you've got Ryukyu, Iwata, which we'll talk about later, and you know, one or two other teams kind of in and around, haven't you? It's just such a shame we don't have playoffs this season, exactly. Because I think a top 6 would be a really interesting conversation. Yeah, and I think we just got to spare a thought for the Sanga Stadium groundskeeper, you know, who probably turned up on a Sunday morning and was, you know, confronted with someone saying, well, we've got good news and bad news. The pitch is playable, but it just looks awful. Yeah, I think some serious questions to be answered about why on earth did they have to have the torch relay on the pitch and not just round the perimeter track or outside or something? I was going to say it's stupidity, but then it's the Tokyo Olympics we're talking about, so it's probably synonymous with idiotic planning. Anyway, let's
get rid of that.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's move on before I derail the podcast completely, Rich. Yeah. Also on Sunday, we'll talk about a couple of games together. There was a disappointing defeat for sixth place Machida, 1-0 at home to lowly Kitakyushu. Kitakyushu scored their vital goal in just the second minute of this game, and it was a real goal of the weekend contender. Daigo Takahashi played a 1-2 with Zen Cardona, then slammed an unstoppable left-foot drive past a startled Koki Fukui in the Machida goal and right into the side net in absolutely fantastic goal. Machida came on stronger after conceding that early goal, though, and Daigo Takahashi was the hero at the other end when he blocked a goal-bound header from Shohei Takahashi on the line following a Machida corner. Kitakyushu's goalkeeper, Kenshin Yoshimaru, then had to make some good saves from Yuki Nakashima and Shusuke Ota, and Machida nearly got their equaliser right at the end with their Brazilian forward Dudu, ex-Kofu, of course, part of the missing X factor for them, you might say, smashing a half volley off the crossbar. For Machida, this was a first defeat in five matches, whereas Kitakyushu get back-to-back wins for the first time this season, and they move 3 points clear of the relegation zone into 18th. Speaking of relegation, the bottom side, Sagamihara, were beaten 2-0 up in Yamagata. The words routine home win sprang to mind as I was watching the highlights of this game. Richie, Yamagata took the lead with a penalty after Shintaro Kokubu's goal-bound shot hit the Sagamihara defender Yasumasa Kawasaki's arm. Kokubu scored the penalty himself, his first goal for Yamagata. That came midway through the first half. And it was 2-0 just before the break when Kota Yamada fired in from the corner of the penalty box after being set up by Masamichi Hayashi's very cute backheel pass. Sagamihara managed to hit the top of the crossbar with the last action of this game right at the end of the second half, but it was a very comfortable win for Yamagata, really. Three straight wins for Yamagata under their new manager, Peter Klimovsky. They're up to eighth in the table. Perhaps most importantly, they had Vinicius Araujo back in the squad for the first time since round six. He was on the bench and managed to come on for the last sort of 25 minutes or so. So that was another kind of positive for them on the day. For Sagamihara, four straight defeats. They're 6 points away from safety at the foot of the table. And it was announced, slightly surprisingly, I think, this morning that they fired their manager. It's Fumitake Miura, with no announcement yet on a replacement. But I'm not really sure what they were expecting this year, from their maiden J2 season. But the managers paid for their kind of poor results with his job. So, yeah, any comments on these games, Richie? So Machida 0, Kitakyushu 1. And Sagamihara, now managerless, losing 2-0 up at Yamagata.
I'll start on the Yamagata game. And I think, yeah, just with their firing of the manager for Sagamihara, I think I agree with you. It's a bit, what did they expect? I don't think it was always going to be like this. Anything extra was going to be a bonus. But I think, I don't know, maybe for them it's just like, well, let's just try it and just see what happens. Maybe something can happen. Otherwise, we're just going to go down anyway. So who knows? I think it's a bit harsh, but that's the way it is. Yamagata, who was it? Kokubo and Yamada Kota created lots of chances, I saw, in the first half. And in the second half, they became a bit more defensive. But for Sagamihara, another thing too, since they played that game on Thursday, I think it really showed like just how tired they were, and I don't think their minds were into it in the first, the first half especially. I mean, they came back a little bit in the second half, but, they only had one shot on goal in the whole game, so that shows how, I think Sagamihara are still firm favourites to be relegated at the moment. Yamagata, on the other hand, along with Nagasaki, I think, both those two, they could be onto something right now, couldn't they? We'll come on to Nagasaki soon, but they are looking good. And the other game, Machida and Kitakyushu, I mean, it was a great goal by Kitakyushu, as you said, but that game was Machida's game, and they dominated and they kept on a lot. They had a lot of pressure, but they couldn't score. And even at half time, they brought on Dudu and Chontese. They were quite well marked, and Machida kept kicking quite long balls up to them and expecting them to do something with it. I think they could have, I don't know if that tactic was right. I think they had them in the first half and they were just a bit unlucky. But, full credit to Kitakyushu, they got the win and they needed it, right? And I still think they two are also favourites for relegation. Machida will be kicking themselves with this one. I think they really should have a draw at least, but really should have got a win out of that game. At the same time, they're still in sixth, so you know they're not out of it yet. But you know, if you want to be promoted, they'll want to be winning those kind of games.
Yeah, I promised you we wouldn't talk about Gifu, but it is a truism for them as well, isn't it? A home game against a team like Kita Kyushu, you play well and have a lot of chances and get nothing. I mean, it's disappointing.
No need for that. No need to bring that in there, John.
I'm sorry.
And Gifu didn't play well, and so it was a little bit different.
Gratuitous. But I think, you know, Machida, they do have all these sort of imposing forwards, don't they? Chong Teze, Dudu, Yuki Nakashima as well. And then I think just getting them all synchronised or probably picking two from three, you know, that Popovic has to do when he's picking a team is probably quite difficult. But it was just one of those days, wasn't it, for Machida? And the ball, I think when that shot from Dudu hit the bar, you kind of realise, well, it's just not going to be their day. The ball's not going to go in. But yeah, I agree with your comments on Yamagata. I think they're coming up. And I think Machida up there as well. And I think that's a good squad. They're missing Kaishu Sano at the moment in midfield as well, injured. So I do think they're in the conversation, and they would absolutely, Yamagata and Machida would absolutely again be in a playoff conversation if playoffs were a thing this year.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of teams having a home game to forget, it's Ehime. It's all right. It's just Ehime. Ehime were thrashed 5-0 at home by Mito Hollyhock. Weren't they? Mito just blew Ehime away in the first half of this match. It was 3-0 by the interval. Kai Matsuzaki put Mito ahead in the 18th minute after being played in by Koya Okada. I want to highlight on this goal the just simply dreadful defending from Ehime's left-back Kenta Uchida, who, when the attack starts on the halfway line, is ball-watching from the halfway line as he tracks back, isn't the right phrase, but runs back to his own the edge of his own penalty area. He's got no idea that Kai Matsuzaki, the player he's supposed to be marking, is not next to him, and it's an easy goal for Mito. Matsuzaki scored his and Mito's second just 60 seconds after that, this time skipping past Uchida as if he was a training ground cone inside the box and firing straight through Yotaki Moto into the net. So it was 2-0 before the 20th minute. Yuji Kimura saw a long-range effort deflected onto the Ehime post as well. And Mito's third was a header from a corner right at the end of the first half. Jelani Rishon Sumiyoshi heading in for that one. 7 minutes into the second half, Mizuki Ando bundled his way between two of Ehime's central defenders fairly easily and went around Akimoto to make it 4-0. After that, Ehime's skipper, Takanori Mayano, hit the crossbar with an absolutely brilliant free kick, you know, which would have been a great way to at least restore some pride, I suppose. But it was 5-0 with just 6 minutes left. Champagne football, in my opinion, as Yuichi Hirano sent Okada clean through, and he made no mistake. And it should even have been 6. Okada generously set up JTET favourite, barrel-chested Towa Yamane, but he managed to hit the crossbar from inside the box. So Ehime 0, Mito 5. Mito up to 10th. This was their first win in 4 matches, whereas Ehime dropped down to 19th. And I'll mention the other Sunday game before I come back to you, Richie. In a fairly unusual 12 o'clock kickoff, Okayama won 3-1 away at Matsumoto. Okayama had a lucky escape in the first half when their goalkeeper Junki Kaneyama lost possession to Ayumu Yokoyama, but the Matsumoto's rookie forward put the ball wide from outside the box. Everything started to go right in the second half for Okayama in this game. In the 51st minute, a corner was only cleared to the edge of the box, and Kohei Kiyama thumped in a low half volley to make it 1-0. Satoki Uejo then tried an absolutely audacious shot that the Matsumoto keeper Kentaro Kakoi had to palm onto the post. Uejo did beat Kakoi 50 minutes from full time though, and it was an absolutely brilliant goal. Uejo took a double touch to get around a defender just inside the penalty area, this time on the Okayama left, and then bent a superb right-footed curler into the top corner. Just an absolutely beautiful goal. Matsumoto were given some hope 5 minutes from time when Ryo Toyama's cross somehow evaded everybody and crept into Okayama's net at the far post. So it was 2-1 with 5 minutes left. But Matsumoto conceded a comical third goal right at the end from their own throw-in deep inside their own half near the corner flag. Takayuki Mae misjudged the flight of the ball when it was thrown into him, so Matsumoto lost possession, and in short order, Hiroki Yamamoto gleefully swept the ball in through a defender's legs. So it finished Matsumoto 1, Okayama 3. Okayama up to 13th, whereas Matsumoto slumped to 17th, second straight defeat for them, and no wins in any of their last four. Any comments, Richie? So Ehime 0, Mito 5. Brackets, you know, FIVE, and yeah, Matsumoto 1, Okayama 3.
Hey, if it's not 13 goals, you know, it's just not good enough, is it? You know, Ehime Mito, again, Ehime, they had the game on Thursday, and as we talked about last time, they're such an aging squad that, you know, when they have the time, they have been doing all right, but, you know, for an aging squad like that, with a quick turnaround after having an away game, you know, probably an important away game that they had to win. Probably, you know, just a bit tired, weren't thinking too right. And, yeah, they just got belted, didn't they? They tried to press a bit too high in the second half, especially, and, you know, they got done on the counter the whole time. Mito, well, you know, Mito are as Mito can be. They, you know, I think Mito's more looking up than down. You know, I don't think relegation's a problem. I'm not sure they'll reach the heights of promotion, but they're looking more up than down. Ehime is still in trouble, I think. Matsumoto Okayama. Yeah, Matsumoto have really been struggling to score, haven't they? Score goals lately. And even the goal that they scored was a lucky one, wasn't it? I mean, it was just a cross that the keeper thought was going to be headed in or something, but just eluded everyone and into the corner. So I think, and yeah, of course, there's the throw-in shocker that you mentioned for the last goal for Okayama. I mean, that was comical. I think Matsumoto are in trouble. I think they are definitely, what are they? 4 points out of relegation zone at the moment. Like, if they're not careful, you know, things could go wrong. There's only 6,710 in attendance, which for Matsumoto is pretty low. I haven't checked. I don't know how the restrictions are for COVID or something, but even for them, it seems pretty low. So, yeah, I don't think everything's good at Matsumoto at the moment. On the other hand, I think Okayama, which, you know, started off a bit slow this season, are looking a bit better, and I think Wejo played pretty good up front and definitely caused some trouble, some nice dribbling and passing. And, yeah, I think Okayama is slowly working their way up. I don't think they're going to go anywhere high, but they're looking a bit better than the teams below them. Yeah, Matsumoto, they could be in trouble if the other four teams, five teams below them, you know, pick up.
Yeah, it'd be amazing if Matsumoto and Omiya end up in the bottom four. You know, that's two, just in terms of fan base and everything else, are two sort of huge clubs at this level, aren't they? So, but yeah, I agree. I think Matsumoto not looking too good. I think you mentioned it. They're having trouble scoring goals. I think, yes, unless Kunitomo Suzuki scores, then they don't look very dangerous, do they? And I think they've actually got problems at the back as well. I'm not sure Kentaro Kakoi is that good in goal. His form certainly not that good. And I think is it Maruyama, the other keeper, Maruyama, when he plays? I'm not sure he's. Whoever's playing in goal hasn't looked that great to me this season, so I think that's a problem. Yeah, and Okayama, I didn't think I'd see them score three away goals in one match for a good long while. So yeah, fair play to them, even though they had a lot of help on the third one.
Well, let's just say they took that goal though, whereas in some of these other games this weekend, some goal opportunities on a plate weren't taken, were they?
Oh, I think I know which game you're talking about, and I think it's coming right up. So yeah, let's get on to it. Richie, thanks for your comments on the Sunday matches. Much appreciated. I think we're in agreement that it's Niigata and Kyoto who are the front runners, with one or two other teams sort of hanging onto their coattails. Let's take a quick comfort break, Richie. When we come back, we'll talk about the games from the Saturday slate and look ahead to round 17 coming up this weekend as well. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Gifu, Richie and I are thoroughly refreshed. Richie, we're going to move on and talk about the games from Saturday in J2 now, starting with Iwata. They stay fourth and 4 points off the promotion places after a 1-0 home win over Kanazawa. We can't go any further without mentioning that Kanazawa should have been in front midway through the first half, but Yuji Senuma missed an absolute sitter when he was teed up by Rodolfo. What a terrible miss that just gets more unbelievable every time you see it. I'm not sure what happened there. Kanazawa were eventually and inevitably punished for that in the 56th minute. Masaya Matsumoto sent Lukian racing clear on the right-hand side of the penalty area, and he was able to fire the ball in from an almost oblique angle in the corner for his 10th goal of the season. Things almost got better for Lukian and Iwata shortly after that, but he hit the inside of the post shortly afterwards. But they ended up seeing out the game fairly comfortably and winning 1-0. Absolutely horrendous time wasting from Iwata after about the 70th minute in this game. Richie, I'll come to you on this in a moment, but I find Iwata a really difficult team to actually like, and the horrible time wasting didn't do anything for me. There was one incident in particular. Corky Ogawa got kind of a good run into the penalty area in the sort of 89th, 90th minute, and you can actually see the moment where he's bearing into the penalty and realizes what his orders were, and he actually kind of switches and changes direction, starts dribbling towards the corner flag. And if you're a serious promotion contender, you know, come on, you're 1-0 up at home against Kanazawa. With all due respect to Kanazawa Dreaming, they're not the strongest team around. It's a bit embarrassing, to be honest. Anyway, that's enough for me on that, I think. Three straight wins for Iwata, and just one goal conceded in five matches for a team with a notoriously leaky defence. It's pretty good going. Kanazawa down in 14th, no wins in seven matches for them. We'll mention as well that Raisei Shimazu, it's kind of a mystery what's going on with him at Kanazawa this season, isn't it? He came on at half-time and then was subbed off again later. It doesn't seem as though the Kanazawa coach, Masaki Yanagishita, rates him particularly highly, or I might be missing something. There might be more to that, I don't know. And just one other point. It was kind of it's rumoured at the moment that Iwata are going to lose the services of their veteran and legend on loan from Gamba Osaka, Yasuhito Endo. Some speculation he's going to be recalled from his loan at Iwata to help out Gamba Osaka up in J1. And also speculation that, you know, Gamba might offer another player on loan in exchange. Based on what I saw on Saturday, Iwata are probably just going to ask whoever's best at time wasting, or who takes the longest, you know, to take throw-ins. They'd probably be happy with that. Am I being too harsh? Richie, what do you think? It finished Iwata 1, Kanazawa 0.
I think, I hate to say it myself, but I think for them going 2-0 up, you know, they should have gone for the second goal to finish the game off. But we've seen Iwata in the last 5 or so years, how they've been so terrible, how they've conceded goals like that in the last minutes when they shouldn't have, against teams like Kanazawa. I think maybe, I don't know, I wonder if that's just played in their mind or the coach's mind. All right, let's just get this win. Just, you know, go and do what you have to do. It may be ugly, but let's just get this win. Let's get these points. Just let's keep rolling. Don't take that risk. And I don't like it, but at the same time, for Iwata, especially, it's kind of like if Iwata or Jeff did it, it's kind of like, oh, you can kind of understand it in a way. You know, it's because they've been done so often in the last minute or so. I'm not a big fan myself, so I'd be pretty livid if I was an opposition fan. But, maybe for the time being, just while they're getting their confidence up, maybe that's what they need to do. But anyway, I think going back to the game, I think Iwata, they look pretty good, didn't they? And I'd say, as we're going to Chiba again later, they looked composed. Like Iwata and Chiba, I think, are both looking quite composed, especially this weekend. And that's something we do not associate with those two teams, which is, you know, it's quite good to see in a way, I think. And I think Endo must be playing quite a part of that for Iwata. And if they lose him, yeah, I wonder what that will do. Because I think they too, well, as we know, they're in fourth. So, you know, they're right up there at the moment. Their form's really good. I don't know what would happen if they lost him. Because, of course, he can't play mostly for the whole game most of the time. But I think just the influence he has on the players, it's pretty good. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I think Lukian up front also looks pretty good. He looks like good, balanced, strong player. You know, he's quite fast. He keeps his shots quite low and on target. Is he top scorer at the moment? I think he is, right? Him and Koike from Verdi. Yeah, both those two are top. I mean, yeah, so they're looking good. In saying that, I don't know if that goal, I think he's going for a cross there. Because he looked up at to see who was there and he kicked it. And maybe. Maybe he was. Maybe he was lucky. But anyway, he got it. It looked nice anyway. And in the same time, for Thinema's missed chance, I think that he might have been offside. If I look at the replay, when I watch the replay, I was like, he looks a bit offside. I wonder if that would have been offside. But you'll have to go. But I'm just giving him something to hang on, so he doesn't hang himself when he, you know, in the locker room. You know, it was a terrible miss. I think, but yeah, Iwata looking good, aren't they? They're looking really good at the moment. And Kanazawa, they're not looking that bad. They're only losing by one goal or so quite often at the very end of the game. And I think they're not looking relegation material, but if they don't watch out and if they don't get their act together soon, I guess, you know, they'll head that way. They head down that way. I think at the moment they're right. They're looking quite good in general. Not too bad, but yeah, again, missing that. Can't seem to find the goals. And yeah, leaking goals just at the wrong time. But nothing too much. I don't think they should worry too much just yet. What do you think about that?
I think Kanazawa have got enough good players to be totally fine and maybe even 12th. But I am a bit concerned that they are not playing like a 12th place team at the moment. I think the point you made is pretty good. I've just got had a flashback to the season when Tottori got relegated. And I can't remember what year that was, but I don't know if I might be misremembering this. I'm sure that Tottori started really well, and I think they were third or fourth very early doors after a month or so of the season, and then they just plummeted. Yeah, because I went to watch Jeff against Tottori, and it was March, and Tottori were third, I think, in the table at that point. Obviously, it doesn't mean much at that stage of the season, but, you know, Kanazawa had that really good start. And look good, and then they've just kind of been sort of fading away a little bit since then. So I think I'm not concerned when I look at the players, the squad on paper, but I am a bit concerned when I see them in action. And yeah, they just Iwata's time wasting was gratuitous, but they were able to hold Kanazawa at arm's length a little bit too easily for me, I think. So we'll see. I can't say anything too negative about Shio Niwa. Obviously, he's another JTET favourite, but he does need to start hitting the target. And that's a similar criticism for Yuji Tsunuma, isn't it? You're offside or not, I think you score the goal first and then worry about the, you know, the referee.
Kanazawa, quickly looking to the next round, they're playing Omiya, aren't they? So that's, well, for both those teams, that's a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's again. We're starting to get into six pointer territory, I think. Yeah, let's talk about Omiya in a moment, Richie. Just before that, Nagasaki stay seventh in the table, but they also seem to be on the up, don't they? They made it 3 wins from 4 with a stress free 3-0 home win over Yamaguchi. The Nagasaki forward Ken Tokura received a big bunch of flowers before kickoff, marking his 350th J-League appearance. But I don't think this game was his 350th. I think it was probably the game before. That's usually how it works, isn't it? But it was pretty much all Nagasaki in the first half of this match, but it was 0-0 at the break. Edgar Jr. Had Nagasaki's best chance but missed the target when he was clean through. Yamaguchi's only half chance really came via Kazuma Takai, but he wasn't able to get a shot away. Yamaguchi's defence was finally breached 4 minutes into the second half when Tokura knocked down a cross from Wellington Hato inside the penalty area, and with 3 Nagasaki players queuing up to score, it was Masaru Kato who got the final touch, nodding the ball over the line for 1-0. And it was Tokura on the score sheet with his first goal for Nagasaki just before the hour. He latched onto a long ball that came down the Nagasaki right and then expertly beat the visiting goalkeeper Kentaro Seki. 41-year-old Keiji Tamada got in on the act in the closing stages when he scored Nagasaki's third. It was from a very similar pass to Tokura's goal, actually, but this time from the opposite side, from the left flank. So it finished Nagasaki 3, Yamaguchi 0. Nagasaki 12 points off the top two after 16 rounds, with Yamaguchi in 15th, one of a group of three teams on 19 points for Yamaguchi, though they've been in quite good form, haven't they? First defeat in 4 games. For them, any quick thoughts on this game, Richie?
I think Tokura played one of the best games I've seen him play for Nagasaki. I think he played Must have been inspired by getting those flowers from his daughter and wife at the start. I assume it was his daughter and wife. But yeah, I think Nagasaki just took advantage of Yamaguchi, who left a lot of space at the back. And I think two or maybe all of those goals were just kicks over the back, pretty much, that Nagasaki took advantage of. I mean, they totally dominated, didn't they, Nagasaki? And they should have probably been up a goal or two at halftime. They weren't, but they finished 3-0. So, yeah, they're really in quite good form, as you say. And as for Yamaguchi, I think, well, this was, again, one of those games that they got found out. And but I think Watanabe, the manager, has done pretty well with them to bring them up a bit. And I think they're on the right trajectory, I think, even though this is a loss. I think it's hitting Nagasaki at the wrong time. And I think they'll be, or maybe they'll be all right, you know, they're still near the bottom. But I think Nagasaki on the other hand, yeah, they're definitely looking up. Them and Yamagata charging up the table.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think this game was kind of a perfect microcosm of the main themes of this round, because you had composure from Nagasaki and we had composure from a number of teams, as you've mentioned already. But we also had a tiredness from Yamaguchi, I think, which is also a theme for some of the teams, especially in the bottom third. I think we did see some tired performances, didn't we, in round 16 in general. So, yeah, if you wanted a kind of one-stop shop for like the big story of round 16, it was probably this game with, you know, composure beating tiredness. You know, that was a theme of quite a few matches, wasn't it? Talking of composure and tiredness.
Oh, we're going on to Gunma and Toji, are we?
Oh, no, that's definitely last. That is last and least, don't worry, yeah. Jeff Chiba, a ninth, they inflicted yet another defeat on second bottom Omiya at the NAC 5 Stadium, spoiling total advisor Norio Sasaki's first game in caretaker charge of Omiya. Jeff went in front about 5 minutes before the break in this game with a Tomoya Miki converting a low cross from Jun Okano, at close range. That's Miki scoring for the fourth consecutive game. The turning point in this match came about 5 minutes into the second half, though. Okano carelessly lost possession on the edge of his own penalty area, and that presented Omiya's Atsushi Kurokawa with just the goalkeeper to beat, but he curled his effort wide and let Jeff off the hook. Almost immediately, as is the way when you're down at the bottom of the table, it was 2-0 with Saldana trading passes with Miki and then firing in a shot which was too hot for Takashi Kasahara to handle in the Omiya goal. So 2-0 after about 51 minutes. Omiya did rally. Kasahara's opposite number, Shota Arai, had to make an instinctive save with his feet from Nermin Haskic, but it ended up finishing 2-0 to the visitors. Omiya's winless run stretches to 11 matches, and they're level on points with the bottom club, Sagamihara. That's 11 points. Whereas Jeff, also kind of in form at the moment, their unbeaten run extends to 5 matches. This game provokes some Twitter questions, Richie, so I'll come to them now. Johnny Nickel asks, Tomoya Miki seems to be the inspiration behind a very un-Jeff-like run of results for them. I assume he means like not losing. And how far do you think he can go in the game in general? And he also said that Saldana is a budget version of Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo. We call that a pound shop Ronaldo, I suppose. What do we think about that? So, yeah, Tomoya Miki and Saldana and this game in general. Richie, what do you think?
I thought, Miki looked pretty good, didn't he? He looked really composed, especially for that second goal. Just when he calmly held the ball and passed it, through pass down to, what's his name, Sardinia. Sardinia. He looked very composed, didn't he? And then I think, yeah, he looks pretty good. I don't know how much he can do for the team for the rest of the season, but I think just playing like he did today, I mean, I think you said he made a mistake. He lost the ball at one stage, but on attack, he's looking quite good. And I think he's creating some space for the players around him. So I think, in that way, yeah, he's doing a good job. as for Sardinia, am I getting his name wrong?
Saldana, but Sardinia is fine. We know, yeah, we can fix it in the edit.
Sardinia, he is, he does look a bit like Ronaldo. That when I saw him smile after scoring the goal, I kind of thought of that too. I had a chuckle when I read the question sent in. How do you feel about it?
Oh, about Saldana. I think the question is, it's interesting that Johnny picked out these two players, because I think Saldana's been really good since he's come in. I don't think it's any coincidence that Jeff have gone on a 5-match unbeaten run since he's been integrated into the team up front. It's a long time. I think Kleber left, you know, to go to Yokohama FC last winter, and they haven't had a kind of focal point in attack since then. I think Shuhei Otsuki's been tried up there, not really done it. And I think Tommy Amiki, he's reveling in having that position as like the shadow, you know, behind Saldana, rather than being right up front, where he's not that. That's not his best best position, I think. I think he needs to be in a kind of pocket with a kind of a target man or a focal point ahead of him. And I think Tommy Amiki does seem to be the inspiration, but I think it's having Saldana around him that's given him a little bit more freedom to do that. In the same way that, you know, Vinicius Araujo unlocks a lot of potential in the Yamagata players around him, you know, for comparison. So yeah, I think he looks more like Roberto Firmino physically than Brazilian Ronaldo. But we had this out with Sean Carroll last time, so we don't need to waste any more time on this. But I think he scored 3 goals, hasn't he, already since coming in? So not a bad return. But he's also got some assists, and as I mentioned, is kind of the sort of link up and space he creates for other players is not to be sneezed at. And I don't think Jeff are in any danger of a top 2 finish this year, but yeah, they're definitely playing well at the moment. We also had a quick question it wasn't really a question, more a cry for help, really, from Steve Fryer, you know, Omia, RDJ01 talk. Yeah, he's just looking forward to our chat on Omia. So what do you think, Richie, about Omia? They've changed managers. It's Norio Sasaki in charge, but it's another defeat for them on the day.
Yeah, I thought they tried pretty hard in this game, I thought, and they couldn't take their chances, could they? The forwards couldn't capitalize. I mean, you look, I think Chiba only had 6 shots, but all of them were on goal. They were all, you know, going on to the goal. But Omiya had 8 chances, only 2 on goal. Like
you're describing a relegation team, though, there. That I agree with you, but they're the kind of stats that see teams end up getting relegated, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm serious. I'm not saying they looked... That's what I'm saying. I think up the forwards, they're not looking... They haven't quite got it right. And but, you know, the new manager, how long is it? This is his first... Was it his first game? First game, right? So usually you hope to get that new manager bounce, but sometimes it takes a couple of games for the manager to stamp their foot on it. So I just wonder where he's going to take them, and if possibly they just have to wait a couple more games just to kind of get it right. I mean, it's not... We're not even halfway through the season yet. It's not quite panic stations yet. You wouldn't want to leave it too much longer, but I think you can probably afford to give them a couple of games. But no, I was just going to ask you, what do you think about the situation?
Yeah, I think time, we'll have to wait and see whether it's a good appointment or not. I tend to think if you've got a World Cup winning coach on your staff and you're bottom of the table, you probably would, you know, bring them in and get their help. I'm just not sure... Yeah, I'm not. I think the players lack they obviously lack a lot of confidence and belief, and hopefully he can instill that. I don't think it's a problem of like tactics necessarily, or even skill. There's plenty of ability in that squad, isn't there? The players just seem a little bit lost. It seems a bit like a kind of rudderless ship at the moment. So yeah, I think he will steady that. I still think there's no way they should be in the bottom 4 with the players in the squad. But I do think it's. I've supported, you know, I'm a fan of a team that's been relegated a couple of times, and it is that classic thing of even if you play well and don't score goals and win, it's almost more demoralising than if you've played badly and lost, because the players start to feel like, well, whatever we do, we can't get results even if we play well. You know, and I think that's a dangerous mindset to get into. What's your stance on touchline attire for managers, Richie? Because there's quite a sharp contrast in this game. The Jeff Boss, Arne Junhuan, looked like he was ready for a few frames at the Crucible, didn't he? With a very, very sharp waistcoat tuxedo scenario. And the Norio Sasaki looked like... Well, I mean, he is a granddad, but he looked like a granddad who just finished, you know, mowing the lawn. He was wearing sort of club shop tracksuit. So do you think that makes any difference to the players, you know, if the manager's wearing a tracksuit or a suit? I mean, I'm clutching at straws, really, but what do you reckon?
I'm more of a tracksuit man myself, I think, if I was a manager. But you could be onto something. It could be, I'm sure there is some kind of confidence that goes into it wearing it. Some smart clothes, isn't it? You know, I think possibly that could be the reason.
I think, yeah, I don't really believe any of this claptrap that I'm spouting now, but I do think definitely there's a certain, like, lack of urgency at Omiya in general, I think, and a certain, like, they're just a bit sloppy.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they just need someone. I mean, Norio Sasaki's proven to be a good coach, so I think it doesn't really matter. My overall point is it doesn't matter what the coach wears in general, but I think there are certain times when, I don't know if it's ill-discipline, that's probably not the right word, but they're just a kind of lackadaisical kind of sloppiness around Omiya's just play in general. And I think they might need they need whipping into shape, I think, in some form. I don't know what form that would take. I'm not saying wearing a suit would solve all the problems. But I'll be looking closely to what Norio Sasaki is wearing for the next game, I think. Yeah, it's all part of the fun. Well, I think the front runner's got to be Albert Puig at Niigata. Knitwear game is very strong during the winter, so
plenty of chances to use it up in Niigata.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tricky. Well, I think Jeff used to have what's his name? The angry Argentine, Isnider, and he would wear a suit with like Converse, which was always a bit of a red flag for me. I was like, are you business or are you casual? But anyway,
hard to please.
Yes, very well. Yeah, that's certainly true. A few more games to catch up on from the weekend, Richie. I'll run through them as quickly as possible. Tokyo Verdy came back from 1-0 down to beat Akita 3-1 at Ajinomoto. Akita got off to a great start in this game, taking the lead in the 6th minute when Ryota Nakamura forced the ball over the line after a goal-mouth scramble. The ball was eventually cleared, but it had already crossed the line, so Akita were 1-0 up early on. Verdy levelled midway through the half, though. Ryoya Yamashita volleying Tatsuya Yamaguchi's cross back across goal for Junki Koike to score from close range. Verdy had to wait until the midway point of the second half to go in front. Yamashita was the provider again, this time setting up Hari Ide to clip in his first goal of the season. And 5 minutes later, a third goal made the game safe. The Akita goalkeeper, Yoshiaki Arai, who was in for the suspended Yudai Tanaka for this game, he was called upon to head the ball clear, but the cleared ball only went as far as Verdy's Ryoga Sato. Eventually, Yamaguchi was able to put in a cross from the left for Koike to head in his second goal of the game and 10th of the season. Late on, Verdy's goalkeeper, Mateus, was busy. He had to palm a late fizzing shot from an Akita player onto the crossbar. So Akita in 12th place, but winless in the last 4 matches, just drifting a little bit at the moment. Verdy 1 point and 1 place better off in 11th. We had a question on Akita in general from Martin Spivey. Richie, what do we make of the recent performances? They've tailed off a little bit and they have some tough games coming up. Is this down to defensive injuries with Chido and Masuda both being out, or something more sinister? What do you think about Akita recently?
Yeah, I think those injuries to Chido and Masuda definitely play a part, because their defense has generally been pretty tight, but it's just loosened up. I mean, conceding 3 against Verdy is not many teams do that at the moment. I just don't think the squad is, I think we've talked about before, but it's probably not big enough to have subs or secondary players that can make that much of a difference. I think when they lose some starting players, it's really tough for them to get any players that can do the job well. I think they have, they've got 3 tough games coming up too, don't they? I think, what is it, Ryuku, Machida, and Niigata coming up. That's a tough ask. I think at the moment they've just got to kind of grin and bear it a bit while they wait for Chida and Masuda to kind of come back, I think, at this time. It's hard to know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they've done very well to get as many points on the board as they have in the first sort of, you know, third of the season, because I think it was inevitable that they were going to kind of slip a little bit, slip down the table. You know, I mean, they've been as high as 3rd and 4th, haven't they? Which is pretty stellar considering they're a newly promoted team. I think it was inevitable they were going to slide down the table. And the squad is quite small and quite thin, and they have had injuries. Yeah, like Kaito Chida, I think, has been out since the start of the season, and Masuda's his replacement. He's now injured. No sign of Naeguchi coming back yet, in the midfield as well, which is a problem. And they had the goalkeeper obviously suspended on Saturday. So I think the recent performances have kind of been, it's a similar answer to Sega Mihara, not in terms of quality, because Akita are a cut above Sega Mihara, but in terms of like kind of what you can expect from a newly promoted team with a small squad. You know, when they do have some injured players, it's hard for them to fill in the gaps. And I think they've looked a little bit tired as well in the last couple of games. And I think, again, that's just something to be expected, because the games have come thick and fast. And it's they're playing at a higher level than they were last year. I don't see them getting sucked into the relegation picture necessarily, because I think they've got tough games coming up, but they're strong at home. They're good at home. So I think that means they'll probably get, even in a rough patch like now, they'll get, you know, they'll tick over and get enough points to be fine. But I just hope that it doesn't become a kind of slog and a relegation battle for them this season. I don't think it will. Certainly they're good enough to be okay in mid-table, but some tough games coming up, as Martin mentioned. Sorry, Richie, what did you want to...
Well, I was just going to quickly mention that geographically they're a bit challenging for them, because being up in Akita, most games, well, apart from Yamagata and Niigata, even Niigata's quite far, but they're quite far away, whereas when they're in J3 they had teams like Vanuari, Hachinohe and Morioka, Fukushima. They had a handful of teams that were quite close to them, so that I think the travel could also play into it as well for a squad with not too much depth, you know, just something else to bring them down a bit. I'm probably with you. I don't think they're going to go too, I mean, of course, if they're not careful, they could get knocked out, but I think they've got enough to just squeak out some, you know, 1-0 wins, some draws here and there, just enough to kind of keep them up. And as Martin Spivers is always going on about, he'll be happy just for them to stay up this year. And I think for them themselves, with four teams going down, if they can stay up, that's, you know, goal achieved.
Yeah, and I think, they've done really well up until this point. It's kind of it's not surprising that they've started to look a little bit leggy and a little bit tired. But I think what will be okay for them is that there's quite a few other teams in the same boat, I think. I mean, there's been a few tired performances knocking around, hasn't there, over the last month or so, I think. Not just from Akita. So I think even if they tail off, as he mentions, other teams around them are tailing off too, and I think that means they'll be able to eke out just enough points to be okay. So Martin, don't panic; it's all going to be fine. Oh, go on, Richie.
Can I just say quickly? Martin did mention about Io, which I think is his favourite player, and the Io and what's happening. And I've been playing him mostly at left defender, right down the bottom, and yeah. But he's more of a midfielder, right? Midfielder is where he came playing his university, and when he was in Sendai too, if he got to Sendai, I think he was playing more as a right midfielder kind of thing. And I think maybe that's where they need to try him, because he's a decent player. And I think it's just hard, because it looks like they're stuck on Okino and Inaba on that side, on the right side, and maybe he needs to replace someone like, was it Fukoin, or put him slightly midfield just to give him a go. Because he's got quality. I mean, some of the players he's replacing are from, you know, they come from Azul, Claro Numazu, or, you know, what was the other one, Kitakyushu, or, you know, he came from Sendai, 11 games at Sendai, I think. So he's got some quality, and I think he should be given a chance. But I think the problem is where to put him. And I think right side and maybe a bit further upfield rather than defending at the back would probably be better for him. But we'll have to wait to see what happens with him, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Taira Shige on the left side, but I don't think he's actually done much in the last couple of games. Haven't seen him featuring very prominently. Perhaps it could be time for a rejig.
Yeah, I think he's played every game too, hasn't he? He's played every game. So I think at the moment the manager looks pretty set on who he wants to play, and then maybe as this game showed, you know, there might be time just to change one or two players and give Io the chance somewhere else while the team's a bit tired, you know, just to freshen them up a bit.
Yeah, I think a good word would be flat. I think Akita, like it, quite a few teams, just had a few too many flat performances back to back recently. So we'll see. Yeah, but I wouldn't be pressing the panic button just yet, I don't think. For Akita, we'll end on a panic button will probably be worn out after the next few minutes. Rich, yeah, last and most incontrovertibly least this week, I think, Richie, Gunma against Tochigi, the Kita Kanto derby. This game finished 0-0. And I think they could still be playing now, couldn't they? And it would be nil. But the game's best chance fell to Gunma's Toshiya Tanaka early on in this game. He was able to lift the ball over Tochigi's goalkeeper Shuhei Kawata, but the ball got a touch from Kawata that took all the pace away from it, and then Kennedy Egbus Mikuni was able to get back at a leisurely pace to clear. He could have dribbled the ball out and started attack, but he decided to just launch it into the stands instead. Which was a pretty good kind of metric for the whole game, really. So it finished 0-0. Gunma third bottom, winless in 7 matches now. Tochigi 5 points better off in 16th place, but only 1 win in their last 10. So yeah, I don't know if we should be surprised this game finished goalless. But any comments on this one, Richie?
Well, I was thinking we could call this game, this derby, the Kitakanto Crepico. Or something like that, because that was pretty much what it was. And I was watching some of this game because I thought, oh, everyone we were watching, Omiya and Chiba and Nagasaki and Yamaguchi, maybe I'll watch this one. Could be something in here. And yeah, I was reading some of Sean Carroll's tweets and I was agreeing with him very much. I think for Gunma, got injured quite in the first half and they had to take him off. So that must be the reason they couldn't score. I don't know. but no, they haven't. What? Gunma haven't scored more than a goal since April 4th, I was reading. So, you know, they're really struggling, aren't they? I think, and I'm wondering, Torchu, I wonder how their apology from last week's malicious battle against, who were they playing? Oh, was it Matsumoto, was it? Yeah, I wonder if that played into any part, because they just seem to be lacking a bit of anything, Torchu. Like, I wonder if that played any part in anything.
Yeah, I think this is something that can happen when you get a relegation 6-pointer, but it's in the first half of the season. I think that there's so much pressure not to lose the game versus going to win it. So I think it's kind of, I'm sure the message that both coaches would have hammered home beforehand is just, we can't lose this game. And, you know, with that ringing in your ears, it's kind of fairly likely that it's going to produce a draw, isn't it? I think both teams tried to win it, but the finishing was wayward, chances were few and far between. It just wasn't a very good match. And I think, to be honest, if I was in charge of football, you could be docked points for like this kind of game. You know, I don't think they'll get a point each, but I don't think they should get any. You know, to teach them a lesson. But yeah, it wasn't the best game. But yeah, I don't know. What did you make of that that battle of Tochigi last week with those a couple of tasty. As we would call it back home, a couple of tasty challenges going in that game. I think it was Tochigi won 3-0, didn't they, against Matsumoto last week? Did you have any opinions on that, on the sort of rough play, in inverted commas?
Well, kicking someone in the balls isn't a good thing to do. It did look a bit rough, I think. I don't know if the apology was warranted like it was. I think the play was not warranted, but I just think, I don't know if there's any reason why they did it, but I'm not. It wasn't good, was it? It wasn't good to see.
Yeah, I think that the problem was that you know, when you see these things can happen in football, right? Goalkeepers can get kicked in the head, and players can get kicked in the balls, like it does happen. But these looked kind of the one in the balls looked premeditated to me, and yeah. The one on the goalkeeper, I wouldn't go as far as say that was deliberate. Obviously, I don't think the player, but the player didn't care if he kicked him in the head or not. And I think that is not good. I haven't seen any official kind of J League statement on this, or you know, a punishment or a fine or anything. Usually that happens if there's a lot of yellow cards, right? There's like a rule, rule really, like failure to control players or something. So we'll see. I think if we're sort of like 10 days away from that game now, I don't think the J League is interested. Is going to say anything.
Well, maybe they thought an apology is enough done, since most other clubs wouldn't do that. So maybe they thought, oh well. They've done it.
Yeah, it was weird having Matsumoto part of the apology as well. I don't know, sorry for having a head. Sorry, our goalkeeper has a head, and one of our defenders has got balls. Or did have balls? They might be gone now. But
bit cheeky. But looking forward to the reverse fixture, right?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, it's going to be like that. Yeah, was it Lukau against forget the big defender's name who's left and joined Tosu Masaya. Tashiro, that was an absolute ding dong battle, wasn't it, last year? So, yeah, okay, fair enough. Richie, well past our respective bedtimes, I think KG Tamada at 41's probably tucked up in bed by now, so we should be too. Real quick, I'll just get your thoughts on the round 17 games coming up this weekend. We're starting with Friday night, the 4th of June, Gunma against Mito. Yeah, God knows what's going to happen there with Gunma's poor form and Mito coming off the back of that 5-0 drubbing at of Ehime. The bulk of the games are on Saturday, June the 5th. We have Yamaguchi against Ehime, Kofu against Niigata, that's first place travelling to 5th, Matsumoto against Machida, Kita Kyushu host Iwata, Akita, as mentioned already, they host Ryukyu, so 3rd place visiting 12th in that game, Sagamihara against Nagasaki, and Okayama against Tokyo Verdy. In the Sunday games, June the 6th, Tochigi against Kyoto stands out at 2nd place, travelling to 16th. We also have Jeff Chiba hosting Yamagata, and a game that you've mentioned already, Kanazawa against Omiya. If you had to pick one or two, Richie, which games would you have your eye on this weekend in round 17?
Well, I think Saturday, hands down, is probably Kofu Niigata. You know, of course, that's, again, top of the table stuff up there. Niigata playing away, so again, it's a challenge for them. And then I think on Sunday, I think all the Tochigi Kyoto doesn't sound that interesting, but Kyoto has won, Tochigi has won more games against Kyoto in their history. Tochigi's won 7, Kyoto's won 5, so that could be interesting. Chiba, Yamagata, they're both in good form. Again, in history, both won 7 games each, so that could go anywhere. And the Kanazawa-Omiya game, well, Kanazawa's never beaten Omiya, so there you go. And that's in Omiya. For me, I'd probably choose the Kanazawa-Omiya. I don't know, you don't know what's going to happen in that game, really. I think Sunday, they're all at 2 o'clock too, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, Kanazawa-Omiya, that's two teams that create chances but don't put them away. So you think maybe 1-0 either way?
Probably 0-0 if I'm watching it.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Don't jinx it, yeah. I think Niigata might have a tough job away at Kofu because Niigata got beaten, didn't they, away at Machida a couple of rounds ago, and Kofu might come at them. On the other hand, I could see Kofu are quite a cautious team and their defence is strong. That could be a low scoring or 0-0 game as well. But Tochigi Kyoto, Kyoto 5 clean sheets in a row, it's probably time for them to let one in. Based on the Saturday game, Tochigi are never going to score again ever. So wouldn't it just be typical for them to win sort of 1-0, wouldn't it? And it surprised Kyoto. So we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, plenty to look forward to anyway, Richie. I'm sure that most of the main talking points will probably occur in games that we haven't talked about in detail in the preview. But that's J2. That's J2 for you, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. If Gunma beat Mito, I'd be pretty surprised in the Friday night game. But there's sort of surprises every week, aren't there? Yes. Okay. Yeah. All good. Listen, thanks again for coming on, Richie. It's much appreciated. Good to talk to you, mate.
You are welcome. And again, thank you to you and everyone else putting on the show every week. Great for all of us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, hopefully we'll have you on again soon to kind of see how things are going, check in with you again in a few weeks' time.
Maybe for the Tochigi Gunma reverse fixture, eh?
Sure. Oh yeah, I have to highlight that on the calendar. So it should be a good game. Thanks for listening so far, everyone. Please stay tuned because after a short break for some music, Mike Innes is going to be along with the all the J3 news in J Talk Short Corner. So thanks for listening to me and Richie, and stay tuned. Mike will be along in a moment. But that's all from us. Bye for now. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on all the action of the last week and previewing games coming up in Round 10. Before the main business, a quick look at some items of J3 news since the last pod. Another week, another J3 club changing their coach. This time it's Kagoshima United, who announced that Arthur Pappas has stepped down with immediate effect due to family circumstances. Assistant Hussein Skenderovich departs with Pappas, leaving head coach Yasuaki Oshima to take temporary charge. Kagoshima's appointment during the closed season of Pappas as an acolyte of Ange Postecoglou looked an imaginative and intriguing one for both parties. At the season launch press conference, Pappas spoke passionately about the alignment of the clubs and his own personal ambitions, and while results so far have been mixed, Kagoshima have at least been interesting to keep an eye on. The possibility clearly existed that they could improve as the season progressed. But Kagoshima must hunt for a new coach, and the Pappas project is over. I'm sure all J3 watchers will wish him and his family well. Meanwhile, news of a former J3 coach in Riki Takagi, in charge at Gainare Tottori until he was sacked at the start of May, Takagi has been appointed first team coach at FC Imabari, working under their new boss Keiichiro Nuno. Now on to the action, and first to mention the rearranged Round 6 game, which took place on Wednesday the 26th of May, a Tohoku derby between Fukushima United and Iwate Gurugia Morioka. Previous leaders Iwate rather had a point to prove following a lacklustre performance last time out against FC Gifu, in which they suffered a season's first defeat. It wasn't to be though, as in the 16th minute Fukushima took the lead, Hiroki Higuchi easily getting the better of Toi Kagami to half-volley in Hiroshi Yoshinaga's cross for his second in two games. The game was won as early as the 48th minute, Ismaila outrunning two defenders and keeper Kohei Doi to latch on to Higuchi's through pass and slide the ball in from a narrow angle. With 16 minutes remaining, Iwate substitute Takuma Takeda hit the bar with a lob, but that aside, they rarely threatened before stoppage time when some less than solid Fukushima defending gave Taisuke Nakamura the chance to poke the ball over the line from 12 yards. But Iwate's bubble looks burst, not only via the 2-1 loss, but also via the performance. On to round 9, and to start with the single game staged on Saturday the 29th of May, when Fujieda My FC hosted Roasso Kumamoto. Both teams came into the match on a good run of form, and there were near misses at both ends, with Kumamoto rookie Castro Tales catching the eye on his full debut. And it was Roasso who eventually opened the scoring in the 69th minute, unmarked Shuhei Kamimura chipping the ball to the far post for Toshiki Takahashi to head in from underneath the crossbar. A soft goal for Fujieda to concede, and they missed a golden chance to equalise when Daisuke Inazumi headed over in injury time. But the final score was Fujieda 0, Kumamoto 1. 13 points from the last 5 games for Roasso, whose improved run coincides with last year's central striker Takahashi coming into the team after suffering an injury in pre-season. Then, on Sunday the 30th, leaders Katare Toyama travelled to Gainare Tottori, for whom Kim Jong-song faced a stern test in his first league game as coach. Kim didn't make any major changes, but his opposite number Nobuhiro Ishizaki did, dropping to the bench Tsubasa Yoshihira, arguably the weakest performer in an otherwise strong Katare front line. It was defender Daiki Yagishita who put them ahead, though, taking advantage of an immobile Tottori defence to head home a short corner 33 minutes in, to the great delight of the small band of travelling supporters and their large Yagishita banner. In first half stoppage time, Shunta Takahashi missed a great chance to make it 2-0 when he latched onto Yoji Sasaki's perfect through ball only for Ken Tajiri to block his shot. 12 minutes after the restart, though, Takahashi made no such mistake, seeing off a poor challenge from Takuya Fujiwara to head inside the post with Tajiri stranded. And Toyama were able to take advantage of yet more ineffectual home defending in the 73rd minute, Yohei Ono shrugging off Junya Suzuki to shoot home from 8 yards. As for their part, a very disappointing Gainare only threatened in the closing stages, captain Masataka Tani's turn and angled shot forcing a brilliant save from previously unoccupied Katale keeper Yohei Nishibe, who moments later also got down well to tip onto the post a shot from Yuya Taguchi. Final score, Tottori 0, Toyama 3. Very comfortable for Katare, who a third of the way through the season are looking more confident and better organised than pretty much every other team in the division. Which, in a strange kind of way, gives me a neat segue onto many people's pre-season favourites for promotion, FC Gifu, and shock early season leaders Iwate Gurugia Morioka. Gifu were hosting winless YSCC Yokohama, while Iwate made the long trip to Kamatamari Sanuki. A sluggish Gifu eventually took the lead just after the hour, and even then they needed a penalty from Shota Kawanishi. But in the closing 20 minutes, Takayoshi Anma's men conceded twice to a YSCC that, before kickoff, had only scored twice in the league all season. First, Yumemi Kanda lashed in a drive from just outside the area, and then, deep into stoppage time, Atsushi Kikutani dived spectacularly to head in at the near post. Gifu 1, YSCC 2 is a momentous result for the visitors, but undermines the credibility of any side with an eye on promotion. As for Iwate, they were held to a 1-1 draw at Sanuki, who took the lead in only the fourth minute via the sort of defensive blunder Guruja weren't making in the early games, as Shunta Nakamura's bouncing shot beat Kohei Doi thanks to an attempted clearance by Masahito Onoda that went horribly wrong. The equaliser came just before the break, Kohei Wakimoto pouncing on a loose ball following a lofted free kick to the far post. Iwate hit the woodwork a couple of times in the second period, but a point from their last three games has them slipping down the table. Now on a run of four straight wins, though, are Fukushima United, 1-0 victors at Azulclaro Numazu. Ismaila was again the scorer, his fifth of the season, a smart turn and shot in the 20th minute. Fukushima don't look a particularly good side, but now on a run of four straight losses, Numazu really do look a poor one. Surprise strugglers FC Imabari played their first league fixture under new coach Keiichiro Nuno, away at Vanrare Hachinohe. Imabari went behind 7 minutes into the second half when keeper Tomohito Shugyo let a stoppable-looking Takumi Shimada volley sneak inside the near post. That was his first J-League goal, and the same can also be said for Toshiki Toya's 76-minute equaliser, a close-range finish after a long throw had eluded the Hachinohe defence. But Vanrare claimed the win when Yosuke Kamigata's shot that went in off the crossbar rounded off a brisk counter-attack with 8 minutes to go. Final score, Hachinohe 2, Imabari 1. A setback for Nuno, whose new side look low on confidence even with the addition of new striker Valdemar, while Masahiro Kuzuno's Vanrare have a very handy 3 wins from 4 home games so far. To finish off with Kagoshima United's first match after the departure of Arthur Pappas, away at AC Nagano Parseiro. Kagoshima star man Rei Yonezawa opened the scoring in the 29th minute, a less than blistering shot seeming to go right through young Nagano keeper Sorki Yatagai. The home side drew level just before the hour, determined centre-back Keita Yoshioka getting himself on the end of a cross to poke it over the line. But 3 minutes later, Kagoshima were back in front, Wesley Rodriguez taking advantage of slack home marking to convert a low cross following a corner kick routine. Parseiro had half chances to grab a point, but nothing's going right for them, and it finished Nagano 1, Kagoshima 2. Still, only one win all season for Nagano, while Kagoshima pick up useful points under Yasuaki Oshima as they await the appointment of Pappas's successor. So what does all this mean for the current league table? Top of the pile after round 9 are Toyama with 20 points, then Kumamoto with 18, and Fukushima with 17, all from 9 games. The bottom 3 have each played 8, and in 13th are YSCC with 6 points, then Imabari and Sanuki both with 5. To look briefly at the matches in round 10, with 2 fixtures on Saturday the 6th of June, and the others all on Sunday the 7th. The Saturday games see 2 pairs of teams towards the wrong end of the table face off for important points, as YSCC host Tottori and Imabari are at home to Nagano. Then on Sunday, it's 3rd against 4th, as in-form but flaky Fukushima host the ever-unpredictable Gifu. The quietly impressive Tegevajaro Miyazaki return to action at home to Hachinohe. There's a good opportunity to pick up points at home for Kumamoto, where Numazu are the visitors. Can Iwate get back to winning ways at home to Fujieda? And Kagoshima are at home to bottom-placed Sanuki. The team with a bye this week are leaders Toyama, who return to league action in what looks set to be a very exciting round 11 when they're at home to Kumamoto. Before then, though, just to mention that on Wednesday the 9th of June, there'll be J3 participants in the Emperor's Cup second round, including Katari facing off against Urawa Reds and Roasso at Sagan Tos. With all the week's business seen to, then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.